You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, this is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar. And before we start today's show, I wanted to talk to all the guitar players out there about something really interesting. If you're a guitar player or probably any other kind of musician, or if you know a musician who's looking to make some more money without having to tour or go on the road or put up with any of the other BS that musicians normally have to deal with, then what I'm about to tell you is probably the most exciting and important message you'll ever hear. As a business guy who just happens to play guitar, one of the first things I realized after interviewing, say, the first 50 or so guitar players was that if I was going to get into this business today, the first thing I'd look at doing is learning how to license your music. And by licensing music, I mean getting your music inserted into movies, television shows, and commercials. And here's why. There are 4 reasons, actually. First of all, focusing on record deals, publishing, and touring means that you're putting your destiny in someone else's hands. You're at the whim of someone who has literally thousands of other people competing for their attention, many of whom, frankly, may have music with more commercial appeal than your music has, which means you get whatever left over as far as attention from that particular manager, publisher, publicist, or booking agent, right? And I don't know how you feel, but for me, I'm totally uncomfortable leaving my destiny and my family's financial future up to someone else. Second, I've learned in business that if you work in areas that are less competitive and not as crowded, your likelihood of success goes up dramatically. And there are way less people competing to have their music licensed than there are trying to make records, get their songs published, and go on tour. In fact, there are so many people competing to play music, the average working musician today, by and large, earns the same or less money than they were making back in the 1970s and 1980s. Third, in the licensing business, it's not unusual to have one or more of your songs wind up paying you multiple times over and over again. In some cases, day after day, week after week, month after month, and year after year. In fact, some songs you even get paid on multiple times over from a variety of sources because different people wind up licensing that same song from you. Many times you get paid for songs you recorded months or even years ago. So no work you do is ever wasted. Even if a particular song doesn't get picked up right now, there's a very good chance it can get picked up later. And the more music you write, the more opportunities you get for placements. The more placements, the more money you make, both up front as income from licensing fees and on the backside in terms of royalties for years to come. And the fourth reason I like this industry is that a free ebook has just been published, which pretty much takes you by the hand and shows you step by step how to get your music licensed. The book is less than 20 pages long, and it was written by Mike Elsner, who I interviewed in episode number 167 of this show. Mike's been doing this for over 14 years, and he's actually had over 2,000 songs licensed at this point in time. Now, I want you to pay attention to something, because that means he's getting paid to license almost 150 songs per year. Now, keep in mind, most successful career musicians don't even get paid for 150 songs in total over a 30 or 40 year career, yet Mike's getting paid for this on an annual basis. And in this free ebook, you'll discover the 4 simple steps to licensing success, including step 1, which actually shows you how to get paid a significant upfront licensing fee as well as quarterly royalties. You'll learn how to get paid for learning how to play a new instrument. And I'm not kidding, he actually shows you an example of he basically practiced a new instrument and he licensed all the songs, and he walks you through this. In step 2, you'll learn how to quickly expand your song catalog by 5 to 6 times its current size without having to create literally anything new. That's right, you'll learn how to easily turn 10 songs into 50 to 60 songs in less than 5 minutes each, and each one of those new songs now becomes another new asset you can sell. You'll learn what to do and maybe even more important, what not to do to get your music quickly noticed by music supervisors. And this one simple nugget alone easily makes the difference between regularly getting your music licensed and never getting it licensed at all. He'll show you four ways to get paid to license your music, and then you get to pick and choose which one of those four ways works best for you. And you'll also get to uncover little-known secrets to using common websites online to get free names of people who would want to license your music. And the other cool thing I like about this business is that you can run it all from your home studio. No ivory tower record label executives telling you what to play and how to play it, and no shady managers or backroom publishers with their own agenda telling you what to do. So download Mike's free ebook on music licensing right now. Just go to everyonelovesguitar.com/Mike. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/Mike, M-I-K-E. That's it, real simple. Let me know how you like the book, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody, this is Craig Garber with Everyone Loves Guitar, and today we're actually going to be talking about the ultimate side hustle for guitar players. We're going to be talking with David Wallerman, who runs a really successful YouTube channel where he's uploaded 3 guitar lessons a week for the last 7 years. So that's like over 1,000, like 1,100 lessons, I would think. And he's grown that channel into a 102,000, maybe more by now, subscriber base on YouTube. From there, he was smart enough to branch out into selling products and building sales funnels. And he also runs a site called guitarplayback.com. And you can also find his free music DNA course at guitarinfusion.com. And we'll talk about that later. But I wanted to have David on the show, and because I think there's a lot of players looking. Two reasons. A, there's a lot of players looking to get side hustles and trying to figure out how to do that. And he's mastered one way. And B, there's a lot of players that are looking to be better players. And he's got a lot of videos and stuff that'll tell you how to be a good player. So he's got a really interesting background. He moved here from France, actually, in 2005 to pursue a music career. In 2008, he joined a symphonic progressive rock band called Glass Hammer. That's such a good name for a symphonic progressive. It's like, you know, it's like reminds me of one of those old Yes album covers, right? Like prog rock covers, right?
That's it.
And they recorded 2 live DVDs and 2 albums. In 2008, he also started his YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/Wallerman, W-A-L-L-I-M-A-N-N. In 2013, Dweezil Zappa invited him to teach at his guitar camp, so he's a very good teacher. And he also produced and recorded a record called 40 Year Journey, which is an instrumental featuring Dweezil and a lot of other cool people. And in 2016, he released another album called Evolving Seeds of Glory. So, man, you're an interesting guy. Thanks for coming on the show, David. I appreciate it.
Thank you for putting pressure on me with all the info. Make me sound important. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me, Craig.
You're welcome. Man, so in 2005, you were around 27, 28 years old, and then you moved here. What were you doing in France right before you moved over here?
Well, I'm French, so I was born there, grew up there, and you're right, I was about maybe 26, 27 when I decided to move here. I was just trying to make it in France, and, you know, with music, guitar has always been around me, and playing with bands and teaching one-on-one lessons and just the struggling life of a musician, right? And I just needed something new, and my mother's American, so I had a step in the States.
Okay. That's what I was.
Yeah, and so just decided that I needed a change, and the U.S. seemed to be a good way to start something new. And, you know, first I thought I'd be here in the U.S. for a year or so, just kind of get new energy, new inspiration, and go back home. But soon found that the U.S. was a really good fit for me for what I was trying to do business-wise and music-wise, and then I met my wife, so that helped too.
So you're stuck.
So I'm stuck, in a good way.
Yeah, of course.
And yeah, it's been I can't remember. It's been a while, maybe 15 years or so.
What made you go to Colorado, or did you go someplace else when you came here first?
I first landed in Arkansas.
Oh, that's a popular destination for French people.
Right. Music hub right there, right?
Yeah.
That's a different story, but that was my step in. You know, I met a friend online. We became friends online, shared the same passion for progressive rock, and decided to visit there. So that was kind of my first landing space. Soon discovered that maybe there was something else in the States than
besides Arkansas.
Than Fort Smith, Arkansas.
Nothing against Arkansanians, but
not at all. No, yeah. No. It's beautiful, really nice people, but thought that I needed to get closer to one of the big music cities. And I had some friends in Chattanooga, Tennessee, which is right between Atlanta and Nashville.
Sure.
So I thought that's great. I'll go there. Met my wife there, who was going to college. My wife is from Colorado Springs, Colorado.
She was going to college, or you were going to college?
She was going to college.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm a college dropout.
And let me guess, you were playing in a bar one night and you met her.
I was making coffee. Similar.
There right? you go.
Barista.
That's cool, man.
So yeah, we've been in Colorado for about 8 years now, and I love it here. Yeah, this is
Very cool, man. When you were in France, did you speak English?
I did, but I spoke like this, which is very, very much like this.
You sound like, do you know who Pepe Le Pew is?
Yeah,
you sound like.
Yeah. I've been called that.
What's the music scene like in France compared to compared to America? Is it harder? Yeah. I mean, it's a lot smaller, but I also bet there's a lot less musicians.
That's a good point. I think there are different Frances. North France is different from South France, and everything in between, even though it's such a small country compared to here. I would say I'm from the South, and where all the, you know, the quote-unquote American music type scene is, that would be North probably. Mm. Like there's a lot of blues and a lot of that kind of stuff up North. More of a live scene, I think. Mm. South is more, you know, DJs and electronic music, and of course, you know, it's not all black and white, but you know, I've been out of France for so long that I don't know. Like when I was there, I was just kind of still, you know, doing the traditional, put up a band, practice like crazy, have a gig that probably doesn't pay, and do it that way. It's probably the same way over there. I don't know. Well, which it is here too, actually. There's nothing different.
No, that's very similar. And you were always into progressive rock? That's what I mean, to play, that was your thing?
No, I kind of fell in it maybe a couple of years before I moved to the States. But instrumental guitar, you know, I started with the guy that got me into guitar was Joe Satriani. So instrumental rock type of thing.
So you come here and then you hook up with Glass Hammer. How'd you hook up with those guys? And is that project still around?
They are still around. I'm not part of the band anymore. Gosh, that's a long story. I'll try to make it short. So when I moved here to the States, I was working on a record, which became Evolving Seeds of Glory, like, which was released recently.
Right.
And that album is kind of a spiritual journey. That's another aspect that I didn't talk about moving here to the States. Christianity is a big deal for me personally. Mm-hmm. And so that album kind of found a little bit of following with the online Christian progressive rock scene. That's a thing. You know, at the time there were a lot of, I think there's Yahoo forums. So there's a big group there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so when I moved to the States, one of my songs, I shared my music, and one of that songs was selected to be on a compilation of, you know, Christian progressive rock. So I submitted the song, and every artist on the album had to record a little interview, like much like we're doing here, but I didn't have anything. I had just moved from France, my guitar, backpack, that's it. Like, I had nothing. And by that time, I was in Chattanooga, so I stayed about a year in Arkansas. I was in Chattanooga. Asked the guy who was producing the album, like, well, told him my dilemma. I can't record anything. I don't even have a computer. Well, there's this studio in Chattanooga. They're also part of the compilation, these guys. They have a band. Recorded the interview. That is Glass Hammer Studio. And then they asked me to join the band.
Very cool. That's a nice story, man.
Yeah.
So you're saying, like, you said Evolving Seeds of Glory is your spiritual journey, sort of. Is that like you came to Christianity later in life, and that's what your musical interpretation of your spiritual journey? Is that pretty much what it is?
In a way. So I was always aware of, you know, Christianity, but it never really resonated with me. And I'm not the kind of guy who just wants to be called Christian because, you know, everyone around you is.
Yeah.
And another big reason why I moved to the States is that I had gotten out of a relationship in France, went through big depression, and that triggered my, like, there has to be more in life kind of thing.
Gotcha.
And so a year before I moved, all I remember from that year is just like walking and praying to whoever. Like, I didn't know, like, if there's someone out there, like, what's going on, right? And in my walks and meditations and prayers and all that, I came to the simplest way. I'm not expecting people to understand, but the simplest way, I met Christ in my walks, and I felt inspired to, I think part of the healing process was to write music.
Yeah.
And on my walks, not only did I pray a lot, but I kind of heard music. Mm. I'm not saying that this album is God's gift to the world. That's not what I'm saying, but I'm just saying that.
I think everybody that gets involved with any kind of religion it's a journey, man, to sit and say that, you know, your thing is everybody else's thing or their thing is your thing is not making any sense at all. So
I think you're saying this is my story.
Yeah, man, that's totally cool.
That's what. And the music that I heard, the best rendition that I could offer is that Evolving Seeds of Glory. So yeah, that's what it is in a nutshell.
Well, that's cool.
But it's instrumental. It's all instrumental music.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that I've made a lot of content, not musical, but other content. And you look back years later and it's a good measure of like how you've changed or whatever. Cause you're never going to be happy with the work you did last year.
No,
unfortunately, you know, and then 2-3 years ago, and then you're like, man, I need to change it and update it. And then you get to the part where, you know what? No, fuck it. It's fine. That was where I was at then. I'm good with it, you know? So
Well,
that's good.
I think,
man,
it's a filter thing. What filter are you using to look back at that work? Is it the technical filter? Is it the experience filter? And so,
I get it. Yeah. In the beginning, it's always a technical filter. And then as you know, get a little older, a little distance from it, it's the experience filter and you become more at peace with it. That's me, anyway.
Yep.
Okay. I want to go back to you starting your YouTube business in just a second, but how did you meet Dweezil along this way? And how did the project come about where he invited you to teach his camp and then you recorded a record with him?
Well, so it started with the camp, the teaching camp. I use something called the Nax Effects, which is a box that simulates all amps and cabs and effects, and it's amazing. I love it. And I've used that for a long time. And Matt, who is the artist relation guy over there, he's in charge of a lot of things. He's a great, great guy. Dweezil uses the Axe Effects too. Mm. So Matt was the mutual connection. And Dweezil asked Matt if he had any recommendations as far as teachers.
So that's cool.
Yeah. So that's how it happened.
Very interesting. That's a good story. So all of a sudden, so you come here 2005, so mm-hmm. now it's 2013. So a lot of time has passed.
Yeah.
And a lot of changes have occurred in your life, all for the positive. Did you ever sit back or have you ever sat back and just sort of like, man, that's really, you know, like not gloat over them, but like just sit, man, that's, I'm really happy. It's nice to see what's changes, like, you know, kind of taking it in.
Sometimes, but you know, as humans, we tend to focus on the bad things that is going on in our lives, right?
Yeah.
But yes, you're right. When I actually sit and don't worry about the everyday things that I'm going through, like, I mean, nothing major, but like everyone. Yeah, I think I've been blessed in the last 13 years. Yeah, a lot of good things have happened.
Yeah, because you went from, you know, wandering around France like a depressed nomad.
Yes.
And now you're like, you know, you have a nice business and you have a family and, you know, you have some contacts and you've done some projects with some, you know, pretty credible people. It's a it's a nice big swing.
It is.
Okay, now let's start. What made you decide to start up your YouTube channel? Not what, not why are you doing it today, but back then, what was your thought process? What made you say, hey, let me start this YouTube channel?
Yeah, there's a couple things. First of all, I've always liked video production, telling stories. I love it. That's why I love music so much, because of the story aspect. And I remember when I was a kid with an old, like, you know, camcorder, I made videos too. So that's always kind of been there. But there's also another aspect, that's the adult speaking. Not only was it fun, but I knew that I didn't want to have an 8-to-5 type of job. And, you know, I didn't want to do that. I wanted to do something that made me happy. And I thought, well, I'm going to have to offer something that people are going to want and that they're going to want to buy. But I didn't know what it was. And I thought, well, that's okay. I don't need to know now, but I need to have people who are going to buy that stuff when I have the idea. And so that's what gave me the other motivation. Not only did I like doing videos, and I love teaching, really do, but another business aspect was like, I'm going to grow a following, and then once I have something to offer, if people like me, they're probably going to buy it. And that is my thought process when I started.
Had you ever run a business before?
No.
Wow. So you just said it was kind of like on a whim, you said, hey, let me do this and see where it goes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. You know, I've been running businesses for 20 years, man. And the first time I ever did that was starting this podcast.
Really?
And I wish I had done that more. Yeah. Awesome. Cause I'm very pragmatic, very, I'm like a very practical person. And so I try to, but I think when being practical, you lose the emotional fun of it sometimes. Like, you know, you did something you like.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, just kind of like letting the wind, you know, the universe sort of guide you sometimes is a good tool, a good thing to do. I wish I had done that more.
Yeah, but I will say too that when I started, I really didn't have any responsibilities. No kids, no wife.
Right.
Nothing.
Yeah. So you had.
Now, I don't know. It would be hard.
Sure. I totally get that. Yeah. Yeah. I had kids at a very young age too. So that was different too. I didn't really have that freedom. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
So, okay. So you started up this channel. You didn't have a long-term game plan. You're just taking it day by day.
Mm-hmm.
At what point in time, and what was your thought process of, okay, 3 lessons a week? Why not 2? Why not 5? Why not, you know, 3 lessons a month?
Yeah. You know, the numbers kind of get blurred. I might have started with 2 a week. I don't know. I just thought, you know, if I'm going to do it seriously, I'm going to make it a little bit harder on myself. Because if it's too easy, I'm going to stop. That's the way I work.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, the other thing is, and you didn't know this at the time, but nobody else takes you seriously if you're not doing something that's serious.
It's a good point. That's true. And you're right. I didn't know at the time. Yeah. You're right.
You know, you can't do something once a month and people are going to say, wow, this guy's amazing. I mean, like,
you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like my wife was telling me a story today about a friend she has, and she does some business, and she doesn't really, she charges for it in a weird way, and all of a sudden now she's got to be forced to charge for it, and everybody's leaving. And I'm like, you know, if you're doing it for free, it doesn't have any value, you know?
Right.
It's just presumed that, you know, people are getting shitty service, but they're okay because they're not paying for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay, so you start doing the lessons. At what point in time did you start to say, okay, I'm going to try now selling this? How long into it were you?
Yeah. So the product itself changed over time. But I think maybe fairly early, really. I started with backing tracks.
Before there was 4 million backing tracks vendors online.
You know, it's funny. A very known website, Jamtrack Central, now, they backing tracks. They're huge. They're great.
Yes.
Great. I love those guys. But I had the idea to do that. I'm not saying that I had it before them, but I had it before it became public. Yeah. So I started working on that and started selling stuff. And then they came out and I was like, that was kind of an important point. I was like, man, they're awesome. And they're going to, I should stop, or should I? And that conversation that I had with myself was really important, because I decided not to change it a little bit. And then I realized that it's not the product really that is the all-time thing. It's the who's behind it. Like, people are not buying a product. They're buying a brand, or a person, or a friendship, you know, that kind of thing. And so to answer your question, I probably started a year after selling, you know, a few things here and there, backing tracks mostly.
What were you doing to make a living during this time?
Mostly coffee shop work, you know, barista and that kind of thing. Okay. I like coffee.
So you're just doing typical musician stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah. One of the things that I bet people don't realize, and I'm sure, do you have an editor now at this point?
I have someone who helps me.
Okay. One of the tough things about what you do, and I, if you're okay if I share it, if not, we don't
have
to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The tough thing about doing what you're doing in any creative venue is not the doing, it's the editing, if I'm not right.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Are you talking about videos?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yes. I hate editing.
I know.
Yeah. I loved it.
Yeah, in the beginning, it's really nice. Oh, wow, it looks great. And then it's like, holy shit, you know.
Oh, yes.
And people are under the mistaken idea that, wow, how do you come up with all that content? That is not hard. Once you're in the zone and you're in touch with what's going on, and you have a pattern and a path, or you have products that you want to have content developed for to support, that's easy. Yep. But it's the editing. And it's the same thing when you write ad copy, because people think, oh, it's – man, you – it reads so smoothly. You just crank it out. In writing it is easy, but it's the editing and the stuff that makes it smooth, that makes your transition smooth. You know, that's what's, and it's like that, I think, in any creative endeavor.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about, why do you think that, you know, the whole premise of this, I said, is that I want to talk about the ultimate side hustle for guitar players. Mm-hmm. Why do you feel running an online business, selling lessons or selling backtracks or selling X, is such a good side hustle for guitar players?
I think with running an online business, there's a potential, first of all, to reach an amount of people that you can never reach on your own. That's the first thing. There's also this sense of community, because, you know, if I were to like prepare like a real live masterclass here in my local town, hoping to invite 10 people, well, before I could do even that, I would have to prepare the topic. I would have to prepare all the content and then advertise and hope that 10 people come.
And book a room and pay for it.
Yes.
Ahead of time.
With the online thing, because it's people love to talk, especially online. They hide their face and they see it. Like you can see on my comments, they love to talk.
Yeah.
But the cool thing with that is that they're basically telling you what they want, even if they don't know it. And so you know what will sell if you're able to read between the lines. And it's pretty much risk-free. You just see – you read the comments or whatever, and they're telling you, this is what I want. And so you do it, and you offer it, and they pay for it.
Right, right.
So that's another reason why online is so effective.
The whole key thing is what you just said is engagement.
Yeah.
You've got to engage with people. And you know, if there's a sense of community because you engage with them. You know, it was funny because before, early on when I started this podcast, I was listening to another podcast with the guys who started Airbnb.
Mm-hmm.
And they said something that really stuck in my mind. They said, man, we built this community one person at a time. We answered every email, we responded to every comment, and I think that if you are willing to do that, you're going to get the results.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's like, look at Warren Haynes. I don't know if you've ever been to a Mule concert. I've been to like 4 Mule concerts, and I saw them with the brothers. He's the James Brown of, you know, the hardest working man in show business, I would say, right? That guy, every show, he hangs out back and signing autographs after playing a 3-hour set. He's out. He takes an hour to chill out, and then they go out back, and he's out there for 3 hours. And that's one at a time. He's building this community one at a time, thanking everybody, taking pictures, man. I mean, he's just a generous – but that's why he's got the following he has now.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, and I think if you're willing to do that and put the time and effort into it, you get, that's part of the results you get.
Yeah, I agree.
So, and by the way, I just want to address one thing you said earlier. You said people are buying you and they're liking you. In marketing terms, they call it a unique selling proposition. And it's just the answer to the question, what makes you different? And that's different for every business. You know, in some cases, and in many cases, like in a personality driven business like yours, you are the difference. You know, they like the vibe that you do. They like how you play. They like how you approach things. They like your ease of how you handle them. And so, that's your unique selling proposition. You. So for people that are afraid or concerned about doing this, businesses like this, what are the biggest skill sets that a guitarist needs to have to do something similar to this?
I think courage and boldness, really. That's the big thing. You know, my business really changed for the better about a year ago. And if I look at all these years before where I was trying to build it, I could have brought the business where it is now a long time ago, but fear was just keeping me. And that's fear of the technical side of putting in place like something like I have, because, you know, I don't know how many hours I spend like studying the marketing gurus out there and watching webinars and videos. And it was very, very scary because they talked about different tools all the time. Each of these had different sets of tools. And I was like, so focused on the technology that they were using. That's why they're succeeding. That's why. And so I spend a lot of money and a lot of energy rebuilding my business, like the website and all the tools, because this new guru told me you've got to use this tool. And then I was like, okay, stop. I've got to sleep at night. Like, I was so anxious, so overwhelmed. And I just went on walks and just thought about this thing. And really, they were all saying the same thing. Like, I think, at least for me, what worked is, at the core, it's about relationships. You focus on the relationship, you build a relationship, and if really that's your focus, and you know, a friend is going to help you. A total stranger, maybe not. So become their friends, and then they'll help you. What that means is, like, they might buy your stuff.
Right.
And in a nutshell, that's what it is. And then all the technology, it's not that important, I think.
No, and also you got to realize all these people are talking about that technology because they're giving you an affiliate link to it, or they own it.
Right. Or just selling your message.
Yeah. So, which is an effective way of selling, but as a guy who I was always when I was kind of in the marketing guru space, I never sold anything, but I had a lot of students who would have, you know, exactly what you said. They were, you know, and you get like it's analysis paralysis because you're like, and. Like, done is better than perfect. Even if it's wrong, just get the shit out there. And then you learn afterwards what you need to do. But done is better than perfect.
Yes. And now, you know, the fear thing, another thing that slowed me down in that fear space is, well, there are billions of people who teach guitar out there. And so what do I have to offer? And it goes back to what we were saying. It's not the teaching, it's you. Like, nobody's like you.
Correct.
That's what it is.
Yeah, and there's enough people that have access to you online that you'll find people that like you.
Yeah.
Or they'll find you, rather.
Yeah. You know? Exactly.
So what are some myths about starting this kind of business? And you kind of just talked about some of them, but myths that just aren't true and the biggest reasons people have for not doing this that are more in the lines of excuses and not really like justifiable actual reasons for not doing it.
Yeah. I think a big myth is that the market is oversaturated. I haven't seen that yet. So there is still a good space for you if whoever's listening thinks that they want to do this. There's space for you. There's room, definitely. I think another myth is that you've got to be a shark salesman and a mean business guy. That's just not true. You can have people's best interests in mind and be compensated for it in a very healthy way. So yeah, you don't have to be a mean guy to make it.
Not at all.
Oh man, there are so many excuses that myths that you can that exist. You can even make your own. They're myths.
What about technical competency?
Yeah, I don't think it's complex. I think it's just. I think a lot of it is the way that some of the we were just talking about it. Some of those marketing guys might add that fear to you because they don't want you to figure it out on your own. I did. I didn't buy a single course explaining to me how to put in place those things. YouTube's a great free resource, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm saying that, but in the back of my mind, I have entertained the idea of helping people doing that for money. But really what they're buying is the shortcut, right?
Sure, of course.
But back to your technical question, is it too hard? No, it's not. You just need a method.
What about technical proficiency on the instrument? How sharp of a player do you have to be?
Okay. I don't think you need to be the best out there, but you need to communicate your ideas really well. There are quite a few lessons actually on my YouTube where I'm teaching something that I haven't mastered yet exactly, but I know how to get there. And like often I'm teaching things that I'm working on my own right now. So I haven't achieved that yet, but with the right analytical mind, you can teach the method how people are going to get there. If that makes sense. So you don't need to be like the best instrumentalist out there.
And I would also bet on those lessons where you're teaching, you're not pretending that you are the best.
No, yeah. No.
You're probably saying, hey, this is something I'm working on myself. And so I wanted to show it to you because it's kind of cool.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. I think transparency is probably more important than anything else because people know when they're being bullshit for the most part.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, there's something else that you said. And I think I want to address this for a minute because, you know, you said you got to be a good salesman or a mean business guy. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up in a very blue collar household and that whole thing was implanted in me. You know, only successful people are all liars. They're stealing that kind of, which is a very not an unusual thing for, you know, to grow up with if your like parents are like bitter middle class or blue collar workers that really couldn't achieve anything because of their own, you know, excuses. I have found after working on for myself for 20 years that in fact it's the opposite. The guys that are at the top are generally the nicest people you'll meet.
Mm. Yeah.
And they want to help you and they're willing to help out and they want to get paid for it, but there's no deception. Now, in the internet marketing world that you were just talking about, that is not necessarily true. That's like a bit of a cesspool. And there's good guys there, but you know, there's certain industries that just attract, you know, that kind of environment. Yeah. But for the most part, and I can tell you, having worked, I was just telling my wife this morning, I said, coming out of the business world, I would trust a musician before I would trust a business person any day of the week.
Yeah.
The ethics in music, of the players anyway, mm-hmm. I don't know. I haven't dealt with record exec guys. I'm sure that I would vomit if I had to. But the ethics of the players is really good. And I would say the guys that are at the top are really sweet guys, I have to imagine. So.
Yes.
What are some of the tougher challenges that people have to deal with when you're running an online business like you have?
For me, I think it's been being too hands-on and not be willing to ask for help. It's easy to, you know, to start thinking, well, I spent so much time building this thing. If I, you know, ask for help, then it's going to completely change or it's not going to be done well. Maybe that's just me, but it's. I feel that sometimes it's a little. It has been for me hard to trust someone completely.
To trust them, or just to let go of the responsibility of somebody else. Yeah, it's probably not a trust issue, like of a person.
Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah, just letting go a little bit because you can't do it all, and the product might be way better if you ask for help.
Yeah. Well, you got to remember too, like you know. Steve Jobs ran Apple. He's not answering the phone when someone called in. You know,
right.
Bill Gates wasn't saying, "Hey, this is Bill. You know, can I give you some support today?"
Yeah.
These companies wouldn't have existed without hiring people, and some of them are, you know, bad eggs, but most of them are pretty decent eggs.
Yeah. So I think there's that, and I think being so involved that you don't take a break and you don't take time to enjoy other things, you know, birds singing or kids laughing or whatever.
Sure, man.
You know,
I smell a song here. What about non-business related challenges? What are the non-business related challenges? And you kind of alluded to that as far as being balanced a little bit.
Yeah, balance is huge. Like that's been hard for me for quite a few years. I used to work from home. Now I'm renting an office space, and that's been an awesome change.
Because when you're home, you're home.
You're home, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You're not in business mode, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The line gets blurred, you know, when it's your business, it's a part of you. It's not just a business, it's you. Hmm. And so you're going to be you wherever you're at. And there were times where, I felt I didn't really know who I was. Like, am I the guitar player here? No, I'm a dad. I'm all those things together.
Yeah.
So that's a challenge. That can be a challenge, but it can be, you know, avoided if you have a dedicated workspace or a schedule or whatever you need to do to make those separations. It's really important.
You know what I used to do, man? A guy gave me this idea and it was great. I used to put on my calendar, like, when I'm going to hang out with my wife.
Yeah.
Because if it was on the calendar, it got done. You know, whether it's lunch or dinner or I got to wrap up early or something, or we're just going to the mall, it would be on my calendar when we're going to hang out.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't get done otherwise. Because I work out of the house, so she'd be like, you know, we going, well, I just got to make one more call. I got to send one more email. I got to blah, blah, blah. I got to finish this sales letter, you know. So, yeah. If I put it on the calendar, that was a big thing I did that made a lot of difference.
That's a good idea.
Yeah,
that's
man. Good. Do that. So there's a lot of guitar players listening to this. If somebody wants to pursue something along the lines of what you've created, and I want to caution people, do not look at what David's created and say, I could never create that. Because first of all, you'll never know if you don't take the first step. But second of all, that's not how things work. You don't, you know, it's I was waiting in a hospital one day, and I met this guy. He was a retired postal worker. And we're just sitting there. I said, "Hey, man, how you doing? You know, like, what's your story? Like, why are you here?"
Yeah.
He started telling me, he's talking, and we got to talking about, he went skiing one time out in Colorado, and I don't know anything about skiing, so I was really interested in hearing this. And he said that there's this big mountain, and I guess, you know, the ski lifts are ranked or, you know, whatever for difficulty.
Yeah.
And he went up there and he saw this mountain, and he said to the guy, man, he goes, how do you do this? And the ski lift operator said to him, you don't start here. And I was like, I've always, like, you know, I've always remembered that because it was so, like, simple and practical of, you know, what are you looking at this for?
You don't start here. Yeah.
You start at that little baby course down there and you could do that one, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that's how I just tell that story, because people, if they're thinking about doing something like this, you need to look at it like that. You don't start there. You know, he's been doing three lessons a week for, you know, 7 years. So you don't start there. You start with the lesson, the first lesson.
Yes. You know? Yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah. So, and celebrate the little victories as you go, too.
Absolutely. That is really important. Celebrate your 100th viewer or subscriber.
Yes, that's cute.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. What would be the first three things you'd advise people to do if they wanted to do something like this?
Okay. Well, are we considering that these people have an idea of what they're going to sell?
Not at all.
Okay. We'll start there, maybe.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's exactly.
Even though that's not what I did exactly, I would still, you know, because it is a lot of effort to build an audience. And if you're the kind of guy who you will never have an idea of what to sell, then maybe it's not worth getting into it. So start with that.
Let me just clarify that. What David's saying is, figure out the kind of audience you want to attract first.
Yeah.
Like, and base that on what the end product is that you want to sell. If you have an idea, or if you have a few ideas, then make sure you're capturing those. You know, if you want to sell, you know, Western swing music, don't play progressive rock on YouTube, you know?
Yeah. And usually, I mean, your passion is going to kind of lead you towards that anyways. Like, don't start, you know, a fishing thing if you don't like fish.
Right.
Start thinking about that. It doesn't need to be super defined, but kind of have an idea of the market you're gonna operate in. Then start producing content, whether it's video, podcast, or whatever it is. Just something that people will start to know who you are and to like you. And then I'd say the third thing, I wish I would have started before, start thinking about collecting emails early on. You know, that might not come right from the start, but, you know, if you have an idea of the market you're going to operate in and you're starting to produce content, then that's a good time to get into how can I collect emails, like newsletter, maybe they get something special when they sign up, or just try to think about that.
That's a great start. In line with that, what are the three biggest mistakes you made that you would advise people to avoid making?
It's a really good question. I think you have to change the way that you think about work in general, because most people will think, well, you're working, you've got to work 8 hours today in order to make X amount of money. And if you don't work 8 hours, then that's not a productive day. And it has to be 8 hours. I don't know. It's so ingrained in people's minds, you know, the 40-hour work week or 50, whatever. And it's not like that. It's about the quality of the time that you're spending. So a big mistake is to still think in those terms. Like, I've got to do 8 hours a day. So that's the first thing. Along with that, the second mistake would be to think that you're only making money when you're working. And if you start to think about that, that'll go down different, you know, thought process paths, and that'll give you ideas as to how can I make money when I'm sleeping. And you'll find ideas. You'll find some. So it's really about a perspective shift. Those two kind of go along with each other. And then the third one would be, the third mistake is to just not start because other people are doing it too. You just have to start and go from there. Because if you start, if you have a starting point, that's your reference. You look at what you did, whether it's, you know, an album, a song, a video, you've got a starting point that's actually here. It's not just in your mind, it's here. Then you look at it, and from there, you have two options. I'll make a little change, make it better or worse, and you see what happened. If it made it worse, go back to the first one and try something else. And you can only grow if you do that, but you have to start. You have to have one thing.
And I think those are great, three great things. Just to summarize, you said change the way you think about work as far as 8-hour day, and both ways. You don't have to work 8 hours. You may be able to do it in two, but expect to work 10 and 12 and 14.
Yes. Yeah.
The second thing is, don't think about the only way to make money is trading time for money.
Yes.
And the third was, get moving. Just do something. Mm-hmm. Take the first step. Even if it screws up, you're learning so much in that first step. That's how people learn.
Yes.
Thanks, man. That's really good. What are you working on now that you're most excited about?
I'm working on a new course with a friend of mine, Chris. We did a few videos together. He's also a great teacher, and this is a near training course. So we've been preparing that for the last couple of months, and we'll be filming next week, starting filming. So I'm excited about that.
It's awesome. Really fun. You got a name for it?
Not yet, but we'll find something catchy.
What is that thing?
It's going to be great.
I interviewed Jennifer. It's intervallic ear training. That word intervallic was just, I thought it was a fake word. I thought it was like a made up word. Yeah, she goes, no, it has to do with intervals. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. It sounded like a space word, like galactic. Yeah. Intervallic ear training. I like that. Where in France did you grow up, and what was your childhood like? I think you said you grew up in the south.
Yeah, south France. Aix-en-Provence is where I'm from. Riviera, type-ish.
Okay.
About 40 minutes from the Mediterranean Sea. I had a great childhood. I don't know. I can't compare it to anything else, but it was nice and sunny, and, I love South France. Love it.
You have any brothers and sisters? You're a big family?
Yeah. I have four brothers and one sister.
Holy crap.
Now we're kind of all spread out. My sister's in Australia. I've got a brother in California. Another one moved back to France. Another one moving to California. We're kind of all spread out.
Any of them in music besides you?
Yeah, about half of them. Got singers, drummers, bass players.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Others aren't into sports, but not me.
Did you have a musical family? Like, were your parents musical? Or?
My mom plays piano.
Okay.
My dad does not.
What kind of work does your dad do?
He's a janitor, super janitor type of thing.
Cool. So you came up from a blue-collar background yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So did that resonate at all? Some of those, is that some of the messages that you heard around the house?
Remind me of the message.
About successful people. They're generally stealing to get the money. And yeah. You may not have. Mine was pretty extreme. So, I mean, that's.
Yeah. No, I think I was really lucky. When one of the things that my parents always have told me, and that you're not defined by what you do. And that's been huge for me.
Yeah,
and
that is good.
I always kept that. And it's not the amount of money you make. It's not what you do. It's who you are and how you interact with people. And so, no, I never really had that message.
Oh,
like
good.
Rich, poor, it's all the same. Who are you inside? That's what matters.
Totally. Totally. What are you looking to do more of over the next few years?
I'd like to do more collaborations as far as like YouTube. I'm actually thinking about starting a podcast with my friend Chris, because there's interaction and, it's just fun, and bring that to the video world too. So I set up this space where you can't see, but it's on this side I'm seeing, but two chairs and just kind of like a hangout type of thing.
Yeah.
Just more fun things and just keep exploring different ideas. And then I'm finishing my next album too. So that's fun.
What's that called?
Deep Inside the Mind.
Is there any theme behind that?
Deep Inside the Mind actually exists. That was the very first album that I did when I was 19-ish. Mm-hmm. And
that's a pretty intense name.
Yeah, right. I don't know. I've always been kind of that intense side.
No, that's good.
But I'm re-releasing this or re-recording everything. I got drummer, bass player, and Evolving Seeds of Glory, the previous album, it's actually a three-part story. Deep Inside the Mind will be part of that.
Okay.
Also.
Very cool. Working on that. When do you expect that to come out?
I don't know. I thought it would have been out already. But you probably heard that from other musicians. So anytime.
Never heard that before.
But
if you could. Yeah, what's that?
I was just going to say, I'm working on it whenever I feel like it. Because it's more of a fun project. Like the albums that I've done never really were about the money.
Sure.
So it's more of a cool. Sorry. Let me shut this off. Yeah. Anyways, I'm working it on my free time when I want to.
That's good, man. Good for you. You said you have other musicians on it too.
Yeah.
Man, if you had to go back and give advice to your younger self, what advice would you have given yourself?
It wouldn't be an advice. It would be more of a, it's going to be okay type of thing.
Like reassurance.
Yeah. Yeah.
You were really stressed out about various things at one time or another.
Honestly, I don't think I've ever really been stressed out.
Well, you just said you'd tell yourself it's going to be okay. That's
yeah, well, it does. It does. I just had to give you an answer, right? I guess, yeah, there were times when I did worry about, man, if I want to be a musician, I have to be famous. That's when I was young. Like that kind of thing. Interesting. Or you have to start now. Like you've got to start like being in magazines and like all that. And, you know, in my teens.
Sure.
So I would tell myself that, like, that's not true. You don't need to. And just have faith.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. So let's talk about gear for a few minutes. I'm sure you have no shortage of guitars. What is your like primary go-to guitar now that you like playing?
Now it's the Vola guitar, V-O-L-E-A.
What is it? Is it like a similar to a Strat? Is it similar to a Tele? Or?
Yeah, it's kind of like a mix of both, really. They have different models. The one I have is kind of like a Super Strat type of thing. It's
two humbuckers, it looks like.
Yeah, it's got two humbuckers, which is kind of weird, but it sounds kind of vintage, though. I really like it. It's kind of a very versatile.
Yeah, versatile.
Yeah, guitar. So that's my two go. I've been using this for about 6 months or so.
And what other two guitars would round out your...
Ibanez is another one. I really like Ibanez guitars. I've been playing those for... my first real guitar was Ibanez.
Semi-hollow or the rock guitars?
No, the rock type guitar.
Okay, yeah.
With the necks, really like those. And if I had to pick a third one, I have the Telecaster here, Fender. Really like Teles also.
What do you like about them as opposed to a Strat?
Yeah, I think they were great for... They're just very well-rounded. I think Strats work okay for rhythm work, but sometimes they're a little too bright. And I don't know. I feel that Teles do it all, basically.
It's funny. That's a cool thing about guitars. You know, I'll talk to 20 guys and they'll have, you know, 20 different answers about, you know, I'll talk to one guy, man, you can't do anything without a Strat. That's like my, it's go-to. And then I had a guy I just interviewed earlier. He's like, I use a Strat for everything in the studio, but, you know, really, I like to play out in gigs with my Les Paul. It's much more robust. So it's just so funny that everybody's all over the board. It's like, you know, do you like chocolate ice cream or vanilla? No, I like butter crunch, you know, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But that Ibanez is probably perfect for the prog rock stuff you're doing, I would imagine.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. Are there any players that you've been influenced by that people would be surprised to find out?
Probably Mark Knopfler. Dire Straits.
Yeah, great player, man. Love it.
I think, that's probably my favorite band of all times, Dire Straits, even though it doesn't necessarily come out in my music. I really, really like what they do. It goes back to, I think, the first, if I had to pick one song for my life, it would be Telegraph Road.
Beautiful song.
Because it's a story. Mm. And that's the first song that I heard that is really a longer song. It's not super long considering other prog things, but it's a story. I just love stories.
I'll tell you, man, when the electric guitar comes in on that song, it's like magic.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, phenomenal. It's beautiful, man.
I love it.
Has your playing changed at all over the last few years? And the reason I ask that is because, you know, I think people that are driven in general are always trying to grow and stretch. And I was curious if that has, you know, your playing has changed similarly.
Yeah, it has. Particularly in the last 4 or 5 months, I think. You know, running a business and having a family, it's like I kind of let the guitar go for a while. I was in this practice, you know, I love practicing, but haven't. In the last 4 months, there's always been this like technical thing where I wanted to play fast, for the sake of playing fast, but I feel that it would fit certain parts. I was never happy with my fast playing. I'm always faking it, like in Evolving Seeds of Glory. Like there's a lot of punch ins, punch outs. Mm. And I'm very open about it. Like I think it's the end result that counts. Not can you play it all straight? It could never bother me when it's on a record. But yeah, so anyways, I had to sit down and really ask myself, like, what is the technique that is the most comfortable to me in order to achieve this you know, this thing that I want to achieve, this technical speed thing. And I came to the conclusion that it was economy picking. So kind of a combination of alternate picking, where you go down, up, down, up on each string. and sweeping, where you like sweep across the strings. And so I just really have been working on that. So yes, I think it changed a little bit, I hope. But that's where I'm at today.
Very cool. Man, and one last music question. If I asked you to pick your top three Desert Island discs in no particular order, knowing that this might change tomorrow, what would they be right now?
All right. Well, I'll do Love Over Gold, Dire Straits.
Yeah, I figured that was coming.
Yeah. I'll pick an Eric Johnson record. I don't know which one. I'm seeing him tonight, so I'm thinking of Avia Musicum. He's going to play that.
Out at in Colorado?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So I'm seeing him tonight, so I'm excited. So I'll pick that one. And then for a third one, I would pick Neil Morse, Testimony One, which is a...
I don't know. Who's that? I've never heard of that.
So have you heard of the band Spox Beard? It's a progressive rock band.
No.
Anyways, Neil was the lead singer in that band. He left on his own to do his own thing. And it came out at the time when I was going through my depression in France, and that album really helped me.
Cool.
So Testimony One, prog rock, awesome record. It's his testimony. And it resonated with me because it's very similar to what I went through also.
Great, man. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
All right, let's get under the hood. What do you like most about yourself, man?
Oh, gosh.
Tough question.
Really? my physique is astonishing.
No. I was like, man, this guy can't be serious.
Probably the best player in the
probably the best player in the universe.
Right. Gosh, that is so hard. Like, you know, why is it such a hard question?
I don't know. Musicians are like paralyzed about saying anything positive about themselves.
Yeah, it's weird. Do you think it's just a musician thing or is it like a human thing?
No, it's a musician thing.
Really? Like,
if I asked a business guy, he'd have a fucking list.
That's interesting.
Because I used to, I published a newsletter, a marketing newsletter for 10 years and, I did an interview every month. The interviews weren't as in-depth as this, but that would have been an easy question. Yeah, musicians are just paralyzed with fear. I think it's the whole thing with, like, you know, don't brag, you know, don't make money, do your art. It's a whole, like, involved thing with you guys.
Yeah.
Like, almost every musician. I don't ask that question to a lot of people. I just felt like I would be able to ask it to you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But it's a tough question to answer. Like, even if I said, what do you like best about your playing? I don't think your reaction would have been any different.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think?
What do I think?
Yeah, right.
Let's see. I'm in a great position to answer that question. As long as we've known each other.
And we go way back.
Yeah. At least I think January.
I love that I'm passionate in the good way, because it can be in the bad way. I love the good passion that I have. I also have bad passion. I can be, you know, passionate in both ways sometimes.
Hmm.
But passion. I think I'm a pretty optimistic person for the most part.
You do seem very optimistic.
You know, I'm going to go back to that thing that I said before I left France, really. Like, anything good, I really feel that I can't take any credit. I think I've been changed.
Good for you.
By the higher force.
I've spoke to a lot of people that are kind of like very passionate about Christianity, and they have the same feeling. So that this is not a unique answer. So the other end, this should be easy then. If you could change one thing about yourself, what would it be?
Well, see, it's not that easy. let's see. I like to be more patient, if we're honest. I think I'm very patient in some areas, but in others, not that patient. Parenting is a hard thing when you have two little kids. Like, it's hard.
How old are your kids?
3.5 and 1.5.
Yeah, that's tough ages, man.
Yeah.
That's tough age. Very difficult. It's not a lot of me time when you have kids that age. Yeah. Me as in you and your wife even.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
That, that's like almost non-existent. It's really tough.
Yes. Yeah. So I can be more patient with that. Spend a lot of times with my kids. That's a perk of the job.
Yeah.
But it's hard sometimes.
Yeah. If you have a third kid, I don't know if you will, but if you do, by that, it'll be like, you know, the old story, like the first kid drops something on the floor, you know, oh my God, by the time the third kid comes, you know, you could eat off the floor and you're not going to you won't say a word. You'll be like, okay, it's fine.
Yeah. So that's one. I'm just going to have to be very open. I struggle with jealousy sometimes.
With jealousy?
Like other people's success sometimes get to me, and I hate that about me. I don't want to be like that. But if we're honest, that's one thing I would change. I'm trying to.
Man, you know what? I'm going to tell you something that my son was telling me. My son told me something about this like a year ago, and I happened to write down a quote that morning, and I'll tell you what I told him. It's a quote by Teddy Roosevelt, who is one of our presidents, Theodore Roosevelt. It said, he said, "Comparison is the thief of joy."
That's so good. Yeah.
So I don't know if that'll help you or something, or just put it away in your mind. But
That's very good. I think mostly where that really was brought up was prior to this year where I decided to take action on my business, where listening to all those marketing guys, like that was tough. That brought out
Let me tell you something about those marketing guys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I had a newsletter for 10 years I published offline, hard copy. You got it mailed to your house, paid for subscription model. I don't know, 20 or 30 countries in the world, people subscribing.
Yep.
And let me tell you that I can't count the number of gurus that would subscribe to the newsletter. And the first one was shipping only, it was $5.95. And in the second month, it was $49.95. I cannot tell you how many of these big gurus subscribed to my newsletter and their credit card failed on the first month when they got billed.
Huh.
So don't necessarily believe all you hear.
Yeah, it's very good. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. Don't necessarily believe all you hear. And these are the same guys that we'd be in meetings and they would stand up talking about how much money they're making and how many millions. And they'd be the first guy in line to mooch a drink off somebody.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was just my observation.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say that with any bitterness because it is, it's just my observation. But it put things in perspective to me that, you know, maybe people aren't telling you everything.
Yeah, that's
maybe good. You're doing $2 million a year, but your overhead is $1.9 million.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
that's a good point.
Do you need to kill yourself? I mean, not that $100,000 is a bad living, but do you need to kill yourself at a level of $2 million to make $100,000? Probably not.
Right.
You can probably get a 9-to-5 job making that money without all the extra bullshit. So, anyway, I don't know if that helped you at all. That's just
that's great.
Observations.
Yes. And then third thing. Eliminate fear. You know, there's always some fear in life. Like I don't want to be fearful of anything.
Sure. Well, man, thank you for being so transparent. Those are very substantive answers.
Yeah.
What's something or someone you miss from your childhood?
I think I've kept in touch with most of my important relationships from then. I think it'll be more of a, I don't know if it's someone. I think it's more of a feeling of, I don't know. Just I miss my childhood. It was fun. Like I had a good childhood.
That's cool.
I kind of miss the time where we didn't have cell phones all the time. Even though I'm totally addicted. My wife would tell you that. But I miss those times. I miss going to the arcade. Like old school video games. I miss that.
Man, you know what I did? We were in Vegas like about a year and a half ago, there's a pinball arcade there.
Nice.
And I'd always heard about it, but I always thought, man, that's going to be silly. So I was like, you know what, man, let me go, because I used to love arcade machines.
Yeah.
It was so freaking cool. They had machines there from like the 60s that I used to go to like when I was 5-6 years old and shoot guns and stuff. It was like so freaking cool. I was really glad I went. I took pictures. I sent them home to my kids because I used to take them to arcades when they were little. So it was really cool.
Nice.
So if you're in Vegas, go to the pinball machine arcade. Very cool.
I will.
Tell me something about yourself people would either be surprised to hear or might find a little odd.
Let me think. No, there's a lot of things. All right. So I don't struggle with this that much anymore, but for a long time it was the case. I guess it's in the OCD realm of things, but you know, whenever you walk, like there's a certain amount of pressure that you have on your foot when you're walking. Hmm. Well, I had to have the exact same amount of pressure on both feet when I walked. So right foot. Okay. I've got this amount of pressure in my mind. It's 80. Next step. Oh, that is 75. I got to press a little harder to walk. And I ended up walking like weird like that.
Did you say this might be related to OCD?
Yeah,
it is. No. You get rid of that word might. Holy shit. Yeah, you know OCD is a response to stress. You know that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yep. So you got to go to the gym or something, man.
Yeah. I don't struggle with it anymore, but I did for a while.
Wow, I couldn't imagine like you're walking through the mall and all the kids, Mom, why is Daddy so far back? I can't even explain that one.
Hopefully people didn't really see it, but I was very aware of it.
Wow. Yeah, OCD for people that have it is pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's a very troubling. When I was younger, a little kid, I used to have this thing, and thank God I don't have it anymore. Like I had to touch the doorknob like 3 or 4 times or else like something bad would happen. But I was very young, and thank God that I grew out of that. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Whew. Yeah, I couldn't imagine them that
thing. Now, well, it's the kind of thing we can't talk about it too much because then it's going to put the thought in your mind. And
no, I don't think so. That's you either have it or you don't. You know. It's, Do you have any non-musical superpowers?
I can fly.
Awesome.
Yeah, I really like that. In my dreams, I always fly.
Yeah, flying's a cool thing. If I had a superpower, I wouldn't mind having that one.
Yep.
Anything you want to learn how to do that you haven't done yet?
Oh, there's a lot of things.
Interests?
I'd love to learn how to code apps, develop things like that.
Sure.
But I would love to be more handy with tools. Like, but I can't do anything with tools. It's kind of a known thing. Like, I can't even hang a picture on the wall without messing up the wall. But I'd love to be handy with my hands in that way.
Yeah, that's it's a rewarding thing.
Yeah, like build things. Like, that would be awesome. Build a table or something.
Do you have any hobbies or interests outside of music?
I love games, board games.
Oh, like what?
Oh, man, any kind of board games. Like strategic games, adventure games. As a matter of fact, there's a board game store just underneath here, the office space. And every Saturday night we go play with Frank, my friend.
That's cool. You play like Settlers of Catan or something?
Yeah, Settlers or...
That's a European game. That's what I figured. All my buddies that I know from Europe love that.
Yeah, Euro games are cool. I like Euro games. I like video games too. I play video games. It's not super original, but I like video games. Old school video games. I like.
Very cool. Man, you know what I used to play when my kids were little? Lara Croft?
Yeah. Tomb Raider.
Yeah, Tomb Raider. Right. Yep. I can think of it. Yeah, that was good. And we used to play that in Mortal Kombat. I remember playing with my two sons for hours and hours. It was great playing with them.
Yeah.
Two more questions, man, and I appreciate all your time.
Sure.
Who's had the biggest influence on your life?
Well, obviously Christ has, but I think you're expecting a human, right?
Whatever you – no, man. These are totally open-ended questions, man. Yep. I have zero expectations here just for you to be authentic.
I mean that's me being authentic,
Great. Christ. That's good enough, man. And then the last question is, what's been the biggest change in your personality, David, over the last 10 years? And how much of that has been deliberate? And how much of that is just a part of aging?
I think I don't know if it's really a personality thing, but 10 years ago, I was more in the state of mind where all my dreams, I have to achieve them because I'm not going to live here forever. And I have to do it all. I've got to go on tour. I've got to do a world tour. I've got to do this, 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 this. Now, I don't think that, like, and, you know, it goes back to Christianity again. I think some dreams are maybe for later. Like, the way that, I mean, I don't think life as we see it here on this earth is the only thing. So I'm okay because maybe I'll get to do a heaven world tour, right? And that's awesome. So I think I'm just more more chill about
more accepting. It sounds like
more accepting, yeah, and more chill on myself, more kind to myself on things that.
That's important.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
that's really important. All right, man. I can't thank you enough for everything, all your time and candor. I want to tell people where they could find you and what they need to do. All right. So first of all, go to guitarinfusion.com, and you want to go there for two reasons. Number one, if you're a player and learning how to play better, David's actually got a pretty cool proprietary teaching method of how to learn music theory, which makes understanding and application of it much easier. It's called Music Theory DNA, and I think that tends to be the biggest stumbling block for any player to take, no matter how good you play, but now you got to incorporate theory into it. And I think that's the biggest stumbling block. So David's come up with a really cool proprietary learning method called Music Theory DNA. And if you are already good on your theory and you're looking for a side hustle, check out guitarinfusion.com, because that's the beginning of David's sales funnel and where people come in and they meet him. So that would be a good thing for you to do. So you want to figure out how to build your own sales funnel. That's not a bad place to start. Anything I missed? Any final words of wisdom, man?
Just want to thank you for asking me to be part of this. This is awesome.
Cool, man.
I'm very thankful and doing a great job. Thanks.
Thanks, man. I appreciate your time. I'm glad we got to connect. And I really appreciate you being so open and honest, man. Really good stuff here. I think everything that you said was everybody else struggles with the same flavor or variety of stuff in one realm or another.
I'm scared that people are just going to picture me walking weirdly now on the phone. That's all they're going
to get. That might be an issue. I don't know. You'll have to overcome that one on your own, man.
Not anymore. That is the past. I promise.
If you see a guy in Colorado Springs walking through the mall, it might be David Wildman.
Yeah.
Anyway, man, thank you again. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. And thanks again to David Wildman for spending this time with us. I really appreciate it. Again, check out guitarinfusion.com. Check out his YouTube channel, youtube.com/Wildman. And check his lessons are great. They're really cool. I mean, as a player, I've gotten a lot out of him. And he presents things very simple. And the one thing that is kind of different is your enthusiasm is pretty easy to spot in there. You know, you can tell you're excited about doing it and picking up the guitar and doing this and doing that. And that's nice because, you know, in life, he who has the most energy wins, you know, and I think energy is at an all time low for people. So any place they could vibe on it and pick it up from someone else is a good thing. So I think that's probably part of your success. So
thanks, man.
Thank you. Everyone, thank you again for listening. Go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to get notified about future episodes along with some cool stuff we have rolling out now. And remember, happiness is a choice, so be nice, go play your guitar, and most important, have some fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody, and I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pair.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.